I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Cartledge.
On this edition, can't wait to hear how Enzo Fernandez became a British record signing, who never felt more like singing the blues. We'll hear the continental reaction to the price tag. Also, can a Man City loan signing buy the Bayern coach time to get his team back up where they belong, in the Bundesliga? And in La Liga, should Barcelona be singing, we are top of the league, we are top of the league? Or, brother, can you spare us a dime? Lots to talk about. First of all, this is the first on the continent since the closing of the January transfer window, where, of course, British clubs, English clubs more precisely, or Premier League clubs, spent more than absolutely everybody else. I'm not the only one who's wondered how that has gone down in Europe. Vic on Twitter says, how do clubs in Europe feel about the financial might of the Premier League? Which league do you think this affects the most, Andy?
I think there are a couple of layers to how clubs in Europe feel about it, because I think if you go back to the Premier League TV deal before the current one, when that was signed, there was definitely a collective gulp in France, particularly, and to an extent Germany, thinking, shit, we're stuck here.
You know, what are we going to do? How are we going to keep up with this amount of money? But then what you see is the possibility of once you realize that you can't possibly keep up in the arms race, you work out a way around that. And the way around this, David, and I think we've especially seen it with the Enzo Fernandez transfer to Benfica, is you can fill your pockets. And if you've got the right strategy, you've got the money to live out all your dreams, the money that you wouldn't have expected before. Now, I think which league this affects the most, I still think it's France, because I think you look at the Dango Ouattara deal from Lorient to Bournemouth, extraordinary amount of money, really. I mean, they sold their two best players and made over 50 million euros from doing it this summer, which will, I think, slow them in the second half of the season, but they're not in danger of getting relegated. Fine. It's an enormous amount of money for Lorient. And I think for those middle-ranging French clubs, a huge injection of cash is something like this. But I think you look at the top of the Portuguese league as well, and when you look at long-term between Benfica and Porto, the fact that I don't think there's... You can miss the correlation that Benfica have been more successful than Porto over the last decade and a bit when they've sold a lot better, basically.
Yeah, I think so. I think it affects everyone in different ways, but I think you can forget competing. You can't compete with the Premier League anymore now in terms of financial level. And it's the gap's only going to increase, by the way, as well. There's more money coming at the TV, coming at the Premier League. The marketing is simply on a different level to any other league. La Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1.
I think it's exploiting international rights better as well, isn't it? That's something that the Premier League does very well.
And I don't think that any other league has done that as well. I think even in La Liga's heyday of the Ronaldo-Messi wars, they didn't market their league to the best extent, I don't think. Whereas they marketed towards two teams, but I still think they didn't even do it enough then. There was always gaps in the TV rights in terms of what was televised, what there wasn't. There still isn't now. Copa del Rey games not being televised in England and elsewhere as well. The Carabao Cup is on everywhere. It's in every single nation and it will get viewers as well.
Yeah.
Spain isn't doing that with their cups. Then, Christ, they're not even doing it with their league as well. And this, I think, lies in the problem that it's not being marketed correctly, and the Premier League's TV money will continue, like I say, will continue to grow. And I don't think anybody else's TV deals is going to grow.
But the question isn't about competing with the Premier League, is it? The question is about something much more fundamental, perhaps. It says, which league do you think that the Premier League's vast amount of money affects the most? And when you say France on the one hand and Portugal arguably on the other hand, they're both selling countries. But is there something fundamental, particularly with France, about the structure of their league and there, which we know is biased towards one particular club dominating and then everybody else having to follow behind? Is that the reason why this impacts on them the most?
Maybe, but I think this like predates even the QSI era of PSG, potentially. You know, I think there's always been this relationship. I think even before PSG get planet-sized big as they are at the moment, I think you look at Lyon when they won seven titles in a row at the peak of their powers. What do they do when players reach optimum value? They sell them to the Premier League. You know, you look at Michael Essien going to Chelsea, for example.
But that's not necessarily a negative thing. It arguably strengthens the French teams that we're talking about.
No, I think you're right. And I think those other French teams have learned how to live with it. I think you look at a player like... I guess Jordan Veretout, who's had a very good career, who's France international player, doing very well at Marseille this season, having done pretty well in Italy when he was over there with Fiorentina and Roma. But he was one who moved to the Premier League a little bit too early. Now, whether it's good for the development of the players, I think is a different question, Don. But like you look at when Nantes had Veretout, who they brought through their academy. They get this offer from Villa, and at the start, they're saying, we're not selling him. We're not selling him. He wants to be here. We can develop him. He'll be ready to go in a year or two. And they're like, how much money are you putting on the table? All right, maybe we've changed our minds.
That changes everything.
Yeah.
It changed with Ajax with Anthony in the summer as well. They said, look, exactly. We're fine. Our balance sheets are great. We don't actually need to sell. We've already done some big sales. We're fine. We don't need to sell. But when a club comes down and they slap $100 million down on the table, it changes your perspective of absolutely everything.
Agreed.
That's when your stance completely goes out the window, because the sums are that ridiculous and clubs can offer it.
And this essentially is what's happened with Enzo Fernandez, isn't it, David? Because
yeah.
I think, bear in mind, they bought him last summer from River Plate for €10 million. They have just sold him for €121 million less than a season later. And the thing that really changes, because as I've said elsewhere, the moment that Enzo Fernandez arrives in Portugal and starts playing for Benfica, he's one of those where you're like, he's too good for this league.
He's a sure thing.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a sure thing. He's gonna go quickly. He'll probably last the season and then go. The difference is, there's the World Cup slap bang in the middle of this, in which he's not a starter at the beginning for Argentina, and which is mad, by the way. The way that and Scaloni ends up doing it very well, working everything out very well during the World Cup. But he doesn't start for the first two games is bonkers. He plays a slightly different role, which I think for Argentina than he does for Benfica, which I think shows you his versatility. Yeah. And again, like, it's confirmation bias of him being the real thing, as David was saying. But the thing I think that took Benfica aback during the World Cup, so the World Cup's just starting, is they've got this clause, and most of the contract buyout clauses in Portugal, which you legally have to have in the contract, they're almost preventative. So if you've got 120 million for Enzo Fernandez, it's not that you think he's worth that, but it's a bargaining position. People can't make you sell him. But then when the World Cup starts, there are clubs, and not just Chelsea, who start making offers near the buyout clause. And they're like, shit, are we going to be able to keep him for the season? And probably not.
And then the only thing that they could disagree on was just the form of payment. I think Chelsea were trying to stagger it over more payments. Benfica were trying to whittle it down a little bit. And then eventually they got there and they had an agreement. But I tell you what I'm worried about, and I don't know what you think about this is, and it's linked there, Enzo. I'm worried there's like a low to mid-level pipeline that might get choked for clubs like Benfica. So Carlos Alcaraz went from the Racing Club in Argentina to Southampton.
Yes.
And Benfica apparently had him identified as a potential Enzo replacement. Now, this is the problem. Premier League clubs are starting to become savvy to those level of players. The players that clubs are looking to replace their stars who are about to leave for the hundreds of millions. So that's going to take away that kind of rung on the ladder for a Benfica. So I think that's what hurts them. So then they can't get a player in. Then they can't sell on anymore because they haven't got that player to sell on for the amount of money. Whereas it's now in Southampton to develop that player. And maybe they want to do the Benfica thing. Get Alcaraz playing really well 1 year in the window, and then hopefully a Chelsea, a Man United, an Arsenal comes in for him and pays the big money. And that's what worries me for teams like Benfica.
And that's where you make the greatest money anywhere in football, by selling players between Premier League clubs, which is exactly, if we're going all the way back, why Mascherano and Tevez got parked at West Ham in the first place. Because once you sell players within England, and this was the same 15 years ago as it is now, that's where you make the most amount of money.
That's what would worry me the most. And there's examples all over the place. I think you'll know with Ligue 1. Ouattara has gone to Bournemouth. Sulemana has also left to Southampton. And again, they're two players you'd think, maybe a Lyon or a Marseille are going to pick those up for maybe 15 to 20 million, develop them, and then sell them on for maybe 60, 70 million.
I think
so. That level's been cut out as well. Do you see?
What you've brought into this conversation is so profound, actually. And we have to watch that space, because I think you do have a point that this is happening even before our eyes. Having said that, though, there are players who are not taking the English shilling, as it were. Vitinha chose to stay or to go to France rather than to go to Southampton, for example.
Yeah.
How does that work? There will be a level of players who think, no, Premier League, fair enough, but I'd rather play in these leagues. So will that not even things out then?
Well,
those mid-level
clubs? What David was saying about what Premier League clubs are doing, changing the behaviour of others, this is a good example of that, but in a different way. Because Marseille moved first for Vitinha. Not to be confused with PSG Vitinha, by the way. As Fernando Santos, who nearly picked him for the Portugal World Cup squad, referred to him, Vitinha from Braga is the way he put it. He could have said Vitinha the striker, not the midfielder.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a forward, developing really fast. He's been brilliant this season. Great left foot, terrific movement, can score goals, can set up goals. And Marseille moved first for him. But Braga say he's got a 30 million buyout clause, and Marseille are like, oh, that's a bit rich for us. You know, we've already spent a bit of money this window. We spent a bit of money last summer, we're going to have to leave it. And then Southampton come in and obviously go, well, 30 million, no problem. And then Pablo Longoria, who we've talked about before, 36-year-old president of Marseille, used to be a sporting director of Valencia and at Marseille. So
scout as well. He's really worked himself up.
I mean, he's in an incredible position, but he's smarter in the transfer market than 99% of presidents. So he comes in and says, actually, never mind, can we afford to buy this player? Can we afford not to buy this player? Because David is developing at such an incredible rate, as we've said, he's on the brink of the Portugal squad when you bear in mind the attacking players they've got. I think you look at it, if you're Marseille, and you think, okay, well, we've got to be careful because we're close to the financial fair play limit and we could be punished severely if we step over the line. But if Vitinha keeps developing at the current rate, we're not going to be able to afford to buy him ever again. So let's find a way of paying that clause. And they have done sort of what Chelsea did with Enzo and sort of what Atletico did with João Félix when they bought him from Benfica, in that they have paid Braga a little bit more than the clause. They paid 32 in the end rather than 30 for the right to pay it in instalments rather than do a kind of hostile buyout, if you like, and trigger the clause and it is out of the club's hands. And I think they're thinking, if we get a good year and a half out of him, we knock him out for twice that price. But that's a risk that they've considered palatable.
I think as well, I think Braga, if you look, again, it goes back, I think, to the main factor at the top of the conversation of the TV money. How many do Braga get at home games?
Well, they get 100 million. Their current deal is 100 million euros for 10 years.
Yeah, and their home games, so what's their attendance? They'll get about somewhere
between, depending on the opponents, anywhere between 10 and 20,000.
Right, okay. So they're getting Bournemouth, what 11, 12,000?
Yeah, they'll probably build that same amount, I reckon, of the American money.
But Bournemouth have got the TV money, so they can do the deals like that. And that's the difference. Braga can't. They're dictated to. Look, these clubs, their main source, their main stream of revenue is to sell players. It's not TV money. So Bournemouth and different clubs, Brighton as well, they can turn down now. But we've seen with Brighton, Moy Caicedo. We've seen what happened there. Brighton can turn down 70, 80, 90 million because they've got the TV money. They know, oh, it's okay. Whereas Braga, they can't. They have to say, all right, we're going to have to sell them. This is our main source of income.
It's a fascinating conversation. No doubt we'll return to this. There's one thing I have to mention in this one, just because my younger brother's name is Folarin. So I know how to pronounce it, yeah? Folarin Balogun, he chose France again over the Premier League. Why is this happening?
I think in his case, it's just a little, it's what you might call a gap year abroad for him. Obviously, Balogun still belongs to Arsenal.
Top scorer in the Ligue 1 at the moment.
Above Mbappe, which obviously has something to do with Mbappe missing two pens, well, missing a twice-taken pen twice, and then pulling a hamstring at Montpellier last night, which is a big worry for them. But while that was happening, up the road in Champagne country, he's playing at Rennes, a very famous name, Balogun, and scored a hat-trick against the aforementioned Lorient, which makes him top scorer. And I think it's... Look, Will Still, as you might have read about, the 30-year-old English/Belgian, is doing a really good job in charge there. Nevertheless... And they're 15 unbeaten, which is pretty amazing. But the spread of Balogun's goals, the variety of finishes, in a team that doesn't really create that much, for him to be top scorer in this division, if you're Arsenal, you're not letting him go. Like, to have him as backup in your squad, pushing to get in that 11 next season, I mean, he looks ready. His equaliser at PSG last weekend was just a masterful finish.
Yeah, I think he's got a lot of variation to his game. I was just watching the game back last night, the extended highlights just focused on him. And it's interesting, he can receive the ball to feet with his back to goal. He can also run and do it as well, bend his runs and get in between the centre-back and the full-back. He can also drift out wide. He can start from deep as well. He's got a lot to his game. And it poses an interesting question for Arsenal, because I think they'll bring him back. But I tell you what, it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. I wonder if they think, oh, this lad's still young. Do we keep him in our squad? Look, we're going to be in a lot of competitions next year. There's going to be a lot of pressure. And, you know, if they win the league, which I think they will, then there's going to be a bit more, you know, pressure on them. So do we keep him in the squad? do we loan him out to a Premier League club just to get a look at him in the Premier League, see how he adapts to the Premier League? Or three, his value is up right now. He's popped off. Do they maybe sell him for a 30 million or whatever like that and put it towards maybe a top line ready now striker rather than wait for somebody to develop? So I think they've got a few options there.
Go Barcelona buyback.
Genuinely. Yeah, I think that's another option for them. So I think they've got three decent options there.
Yeah, my brother Falerian will be so pleased to hear that. he's the black sheep of the family. He's a gooner.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
So, moving on to the Bundesliga, you've got the manager of the team that is supposed to be at the top of the Bundesliga traditionally, Bayern Munich, under pressure. We're talking Julian Nagelsmann there. But it's not surprising, is it, that he's under pressure? Because have they won a single Bundesliga game this year?
No, they've not. Three games, three draws since they've come back.
First time since 1978.
It's remarkable. So we have to say, to put it in some sort of perspective, they won 4-0 at Mainz in the Cup last night, a game in which Joao Cancelo, who we might come to in a second, made his debut, assisted for Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting for the opening goal after 17 minutes, and looked pretty good. But I guess with a player arriving who fills what can only be described as a problem position for Bayern.
What problem?
They've really struggled to find the right back. Now, Mazraoui's come in. I don't think there's a suggestion that he's quite at that level yet. Benjamin Pavard has always really been a centre-back playing at right-back. They don't want to play Kimmich there because they miss him in midfield. And you need basically an equivalent of Alphonso Davies on the other side. And that's what Cancelo is at the least. It feels like slightly understating the value of Cancelo to talk about him as a counterpart for another player. But, you know, Alphonso Davies is a very complete footballer, so I don't think it's any sort of slight at all. And so it's a big plus for them. That also means less excuses, because with Nagelsmann, it's felt that... I think the concern has really been, and especially after the draw against Eintracht Frankfurt at the weekend, where they led, and then... you had Randall Colomwani, who you may remember from such efforts as the World Cup final and nearly scoring the winning goal in it, got the equaliser for Eintracht Frankfurt in that, which was, I think, a light bit of theft at the very least. Bayern were really good in that game, I thought. Played well in the second half against Köln, where they needed a last-minute Kimmich equaliser, as we were saying last week, to get a draw as well. But the concern around Bayern is the fact that if you're playing well and not finishing games off, that's the opposite of normal Bayern, really. Bayern are able to cruise through games normally and then bring their individual quality to bear in big moments. But when you're in a position where they haven't got that killer instinct, it's led to people all of a sudden looking, actually, is this a mood set by the coach? And obviously, they've invested a lot in Nagelsmann. World record transfer fee for a coach to bring him across. 5-year contract. I don't think anyone's thinking about binning him right this second, because not least because it would make them look stupid and be horrendously expensive. But people are starting to question the sort of atmosphere that he's creating.
It's understandable. Look, they're a big club there. They've got more resources than everybody else. You know what I mean? You'd look and as well. That it's quite striking. So they paid Leipzig 82 million for Upamecano, Sabitzer and Nagelsmann, right? And Nagelsmann included, don't forget, he came from there as well. And they're still only 2 points above Leipzig in the Bundesliga table. So things like that, people will throw that at you. Now, I think here, I'm a big fan of Nagelsmann, so maybe I'm going to be biased here. I think the players have let him down really, really badly. I think there's a casual sort of look to them. I don't think they're playing, you know, with the same energy and vibe that they usually do.
Well, they're going off to the Paris Fashion Week whenever they can.
Precisely. Well, there you go. Case in point.
But isn't that allowed? Aren't footballers allowed to have days off?
Well,
not when you're shit. You have to be in all the time, mate. You can't leave the training ground. Maybe I'm being a bit soon as Roy Keane esque.
This from a man who definitely wouldn't go to Paris Fashion Week on his day off if he was a footballer.
You didn't have to speak French. It's Paris Fashion Week. You don't have to speak the language.
And I think, and genuinely, if you hear as well the reports in the German media, they say that Nagelsmann's actually bent a lot of his ways towards the players as well. He's talking to them a lot more. He's been a bit more personal to them. He's stopped over-engineering tactics. He's stopped, you know, exaggerating things, complicating things. He's gone back to brass tacks, as it were, with them a little bit. But again, there's been no upside from them at the moment. Now, I think two things are going to change it. I think one, what we touched on, João Cancelo. I think he plays that inverted fullback role that Nagelsmann wants from his team, you know, to have. I think he plays that better than Pavard. I don't think Pavard can play that. I also think Pavard's probably got an eye on a move in the summer as well. You know, there's a lot of talk about that as well. So I think that's got a lot to do with things. And then Sadio Mane. They've not had him enough in that team, you know, to get a rhythm with him. Now, he's back in training, he's back kicking the ball, so hopefully he'll be back soon. So, look, if you're putting João Cancelo and Sadio Mane back in a team, we're talking two players who, last few seasons in the Premier League, have been the best players, up with the best players, both of them. So that's a massive injection of quality and, I think, energy as well. And that's what this team needs, energy, because they just look so casual to me.
This question from Plowman, and I hope I'll pronounce it right, on Insta, is the one. Given what you've just said a moment or two ago, Andy, about Nagelsmann being the record coach signing, etc., the question simply is Nagelsmann the project manager that Bayern think that they want but don't? Could Bayern really fire him?
I think they do want him. I think they definitely want him. Mm. And with Bayern, I think if you look at the last decade, it's all been about aesthetics. Where they wanted to move in going, and we've talked about this before, in going Van Gaal, Heinkes, Guardiola, is into a point where you've got this club that's incredibly commercially successful. You want to create a Bayern brand of football. And of course, that brand of football that they're going to play under Nagelsmann is different to the sort of football that they played under Guardiola, which I think is an absolute peak for Bayern, by the way, even if they didn't win the Champions League. But they want something that's philosophy driven. So I think that's very, very important. Now, the problem is, what Guardiola was very good at doing, and obviously Guardiola represents a pinnacle for most clubs on the pitch. I don't think you can argue with that. You know, one of the greatest coaches, if not the greatest coach of his generation. And I think what is so understated about what Guardiola did at Bayern is how he combined, and he's done it at Manchester City, how he's combined the more native characteristics of the club and the team with his own ideas. He's not sought to make them Barcelona. And that's what he did really well.
Is that the qualities of a project manager? Because I wouldn't have thought that he would be regarded as a project manager.
I think he is. He is a project manager, though.
Really?
Yeah, he is.
Because Guardiola?
Yeah, because he creates a philosophy and an identity. He doesn't just make the team win. There's more to it than that. He creates a whole ethos. So I think in his way, yes, he is a project
manager.
What
is the project at Bayern Munich that Nagelsmann is managing?
To bring back an essence of philosophy that they haven't had since Guardiola was there. But what Guardiola was so good at doing is combining, as I said, the native characteristics of Bayern with his own ideas. Like, Bayern were more aggressive than any of the Barcelona teams he'd had, which I think is him combining what Bayern are about with what he's about. And the question is, can Nagelsmann, who's younger, less experienced, a bit less authority, I think you have to say, even if people really respect him, can he combine Bayern's native characteristics with his way of playing the game? And that's the question at the moment, I think, because at the moment it feels as if there's a lack of genuine leadership on the pitch. Now, maybe Sadio Mane, who is an understated leader, changes that. But it doesn't feel that Kimmich is doing that for him. And you know, you were saying, David, that you feel the players have let him down to an extent. From that perspective, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, that's exactly what I see. Honestly, it's the thing that stands... Look, Nagelsmann's got his flaws. Don't get me wrong. I think sometimes he can overcomplicate, over-engineer things, as it were. But ultimately, I think it's clear what he wants to do. I just don't think the players have executed it. I don't think they've shown any desire to execute it. Whether there's been a breakdown in communication between them, maybe that's something that Nagelsmann needs to improve. Still a very, very young guy, still learning, I think, in many ways as well, despite being in this massive job. I think the players need to improve. That is the top thing here, top line.
There are different types of leadership. Do you think they miss the surety of Lewandowski being that go-to guy? The fact that you know that you can play crap for 85 minutes and he can pluck you a goal
He's mid-30s. They couldn't have been relying on that for much longer
as well. Right.
Don't get me wrong, he's been brilliant for Barcelona and they're really enjoying having him as well. But that isn't going to be around for a long, long time. Yeah. You need to break away. And it's a very, very young squad at Bayern as well. They brought in a lot of young players, from Ajax as well, Gravenberch, Masraoui. You know, they brought these type of players in. And... look, they have to be given time to create their own identity as well. And that's why I think it would be ridiculous to get rid of Nagelsmann now. They need to give it a bit more time. They need to give them the rest of the season, absolutely. And then readdress things in the summer, see where they went wrong, see what holes they have. Nagelsmann looks at himself as well. But ultimately, I think Nagelsmann is the guy long-term for Bayern.
Well, as soon as she heard that you were coming in today, David, our Ramble colleague, Kate Mason, thought... David Cartilage, I'll go to Barcelona before he does. And she did, and she sent this report back.
All right, you sexy Europeans. Hi. Apparently you don't want 15 minutes on the bloody delicious food in Barcelona, so all I'm going to say is, oh my God, octopus and that creamy potato that goes underneath it, and also chocolate on bread with salt and oil. Unreal. The football. It was a really, really cold day in the Montilivi Stadium. I can't speak Catalan, unfortunately, but I was able to pick up on, well, the main chant, which was as follows. Ansu Fati, whoa, Ansu Fati. Yeah, you get it. And I was pretty excited to see him play. He had some nice touches, but actually couldn't get near the Girona goal. Really, Girona had all the chances, to be honest. The main thing that was really good from Barcelona was their defence. They were a really strong defensive unit. Only goal was really a mistake by Paolo Gazzaniga, which Pedri tapped in. So that was hard, but something I, you know, perhaps should have been expecting as I was just there, like, loving him and missing him from Tottenham. So they looked like a unit defensively. They didn't really create any chances. I was quite surprised by that. It didn't look coherent to me.
Yeah, that's our Ramble colleague, Kate Mason, our on-the-spot reporter when it comes to La Liga now, David. But nevertheless, you still have an important role in here, because although she's talking about the food, and we'll come to your own food recommendations for your Games of the Weeks later on, but she also talked about Barcelona's somewhat lacklustre on the pitch. Is that because of all their other worries off the pitch? They're top of the league. Mm. They should be styling it out now. They should be partying on the pitch, shouldn't they?
Yeah, 50 points, record haul. But
8 points clear of Real Madrid.
Yeah, 8 points clear as of last night, as of Wednesday night. I think they are doing very well on the pitch. I think people had a particular idea of what Barcelona would be like under Xavi. And they are a little bit removed from that. They put defensive competence above a lot of things.
Are we saying he's Catalan Glenn Hoddle, surprisingly defensive?
Yeah, it's an interesting. Yeah, it could be. But at the same time, as well as that, I think if you watched them last night, I thought some of the offensive transitions were incredible. And Xavi said himself that he had goosebumps by seeing those.
So is that the thing then, when you consider, like, at the start of this week, because as Kate says, the fact that they are so defensively competent is surprising. I mean, even after that Jules Koundé own goal last night for Betis, which was just a bizarre own goal, really, they have conceded 7 all season in 19 games, which is absolutely remarkable. As we've said time and time again, the fact that Ter Stegen is having a great season again is a big part of that. The way they defended at Betis last night, it felt to me like I think they did play within themselves more at Girona at the weekend. But they really earned the right to play at Betis. And you have to, because Heliopolis is a bear pit, by the way. But especially in that first half, they defended really, really well, I thought.
Really well organised. They've got some things done really, really nicely in terms of organisation. Just about keeping your line straight, about everybody pushing out together at the same time, everybody coming back in. They've got that down to a T. I think they're really, really well drilled, really well coached there. I think Xavi's got that through to them. And it's impressive considering, look, I'd say it's the weakest, and this is the mad thing, I think defence is the weakest area of the team if you look at it on a pure personnel level. When it hits the summer, I mean, you know, well, the finances is another
talk
of what they can do. But look, they need to buy a centre-back, and they've got a right-back at the moment in Jules Koundé, who clearly wants to play centre-back as well. So there's a few interests, and, you know, Jordi Alba's probably going to leave as well, but they've got a brilliant young replacement, I think, already in him, for him. And yeah, they're going to have to do some work there, but they are looking really, really good in defence.
Although it's their defence in court that they're going to need to beef up as well, isn't it? I'm not trying to be funny.
That's a great link. Hats off for that.
But you know, they have got this legal issue that's still not quite over yet, and La Liga themselves are going toe-to-toe with them in the courts.
The Gavi thing is extraordinary. I think it was one of the extraordinary stories that was really missed on deadline day. The fact that, obviously, he was a youth player who came through. They wanted to give him a very big first pro contract, one that gave him a 1 billion euro release clause. Talking of teams having a clubs having a release clause in there to protect themselves as much as anything else. Now, the thing was, La Liga had refused to ratify that because they were so close to the wage cap, Barcelona. So they asked La Liga for flexibility. They told Barcelona no. So basically, Barcelona went to court and they were able to get the deal ratified. Now, they really needed to get it ratified, because if it hadn't have been ratified by 23:59 on deadline day, Gavi could have walked away for nothing. There's nothing to suggest that he necessarily would have. But you just ask, how do Barcelona keep leaving themselves in these positions?
I think they're genuinely still feeling the effects of the Bartomeu era, which I think ravaged them so, so badly. The financial mismanagement under him and what have you, and everything else as well. They're still recovering from that. I think Spain has been particularly decimated by what happened with COVID and what have you, with the stadium shutdown. I think if you look at La Liga attendances generally across the board, they're down. They're not very good. There's not too much of it. There's no real way day culture and such there. But getting back to Barcelona as well, they are still feeling the effects of that. And, you know, Jean Laporta is trying to sift through all that, get Barcelona back on the steady. But also, he's spinning a lot of plates because he's wanting to bring young players through. He's wanting Barca to have an eye on the academy, but he's also wanting to make them competitive in the now, and that's why they're signing. That's why they've signed players like Alonso, Lewandowski, Frank Kessie. So they're buying win now players as well, or bringing in win now players as well as the academy players. So that he's spinning a lot of plates in that sense. So that is why they keep finding themselves in this position, and it's why in the summer we're going to have the same discussion that we had last summer as well. We're going to be talking about a Frankie de Jong transfer saga. We're going to be talking about Barcelona needing to find about 200 million. Tebas himself, he said, you know, that Barcelona need to find 200 million, looking at their balance sheets and what have you. So we're going to be going through exactly the same storylines again.
I mean, that's not easy to do, is it?
No. It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, I was going to say something's missing, though, because they're ahead. You know, Barcelona, this is Barcelona, ahead of their rivals, Real Madrid, by 8 points in La Liga. They're going to win La Liga with, you know, without any other sort of hiccups. And they don't seem that bothered about winning and being top of the league in La Liga.
Well, I think on a financial level, that's true, certainly, because for their financial plan to work, for Joan Laporta's financial plan to work, they need to succeed in Europe.
Yeah.
That's already not possible this season. And I say that with full respect for how exciting the last 32 time the Europa League is going to be with Manchester United. Is not a Champions League money spinner. If it's a Champions League game in terms of quality, tie in terms of quality and on paper, it's not going to make them the money that they need. So, you know, winning the league will be nice. It won't fix any of their problems, which I think is the issue.
The league is personal. The league is a, situation where they want to get back on top of Real Madrid in Spain and say, look, we're Spain's biggest clubs. That's a personal one.
Emotional.
Yeah, personal, emotional. Yeah. You know, it's one for the fans. Just to say, we're the kings of Spain. Champions League, like Andy said, perfectly put, is much, much bigger in terms of financial impact. And the money, extra money that you can bring in off a Champions League run is absolutely remarkable. It can boost your accounts up. And don't forget, Barcelona's pulled a few levers as well, so their accounts are going to look quite rosy in 2023 in terms of the revenue that they've generated. But they're still going to need to bring more money in.
Which levers do they pull?
Several levers.
Okay.
A lot of levers.
Actually, a question for you, David, in terms of the money they've generated to spend on players short term, mainly forward players, as you're saying, Lewandowski, Rafinha. If you were taking up an opposite position of they've been incredibly financially irresponsible, which I think is the one that a lot of people would take and I would certainly edge towards, how much of that can be justified by the injuries to Ansu Fati? I mean, you heard Kate saying how much anticipation there is around him. And I think it's kind of like, it's not quite the same, but it's a little bit like Saniolo in Italy. Mm. Everyone wants to believe that he can hit the level of that early potential suggested. Injuries have really held him back. How much of that signing of forward players has been to compensate for the lack of him and has been to protect him so he can be eased back in gradually?
They've had a lot of players to replace. Neymar went first, Messi went, and then of course Luis Suarez went as well. So there's your attack that was part of one of the greatest teams that you've ever produced, all gone. You need to replace those. You're not going to get every decision after that right, and that's what's happened. They've got some correct. I think Rafinha's been really, really impressive. He's done very well. I still think they would have bought him even if Ansu had been fit as well, because they want depth in that squad, and they know that, you know, that's what they need to compete. They can't just, you know, putting out a strong 11. They need to have depth there as well. So I understand why they've done that. And look, Memphis came in and they've obviously got rid of him now as well. So they've been fortunate in that sense. So there's going to be trial and error there, I think, with them. And it's understandable when you're getting off, you know, that pedestal of MSN, what's all gone, Messi, Suarez, Neymar.
So, both of you, this is the first of our post-January transfer window Game of the Week recommendations. So I'm excited. Where are you going to go, David, with the Game of the Week recommendation?
I'm going to the Netherlands. Top of the table clash. We've got Feyenoord versus PSV Eindhoven. Sunday, 1:30. I think it's going to be a stormer of a game. I think, if you look at the table, Feyenoord's currently leading the table at the moment. PSV, 4 points behind. Stuck in between them, Sound and Timmins, AZ. And I think we've got a real title race there. And I think, a win here for PSV would make it extremely exciting for the running. So that's the one I'm advising to watch.
Don't get me wrong, but it sounds very cheesy.
Edam. Cheesy.
That's what we're eating, is it?
That's what we're eating. Yeah. I was actually going to recommend grilled cheese. So do it. Yeah, I'm quite enjoying a grilled cheese at the moment. But I'd say add some green chilies in it as well, just to spice it up.
Okay.
Yeah. Little tip.
Very nice. Very nice. I'm not going to criticise Dutch cheese. It is what it is. but
see, I thought I was the one who had to be worried about food, because the thing is, I'm going to go for an Italian game. I'm going to go for it's the Milan derby.
Up against Nicky,
it's the Milan derby. Well, that's the issue, really, isn't it? It's going to be the Milan derby between Inter and Milan. Milan in absolutely abysmal form, and only a couple of weeks off playing Tottenham in the Champions League, of course. After they lost 5-2 at home to Sassuolo last weekend, Sassuolo, who are not having a great season by any stretch of the imagination, first time ever in Serie A that Milan have conceded 4 goals or more in successive league games. So a bit of a shambles. They look all over the place. Inter, who are incredibly hot and cold, of course, advanced in the Coppa Italia this week. But you never know what you're going to get from them. You're either...
It's saying something, isn't it?
You're either going to get diamonds or dog dirt, to paraphrase David Bowie. So I would say Inter are the favourites for this, but it'll be atmospheric. If Milan are going to get off the ground again, this is a great place to do it. So I think it's going to be an absolutely terrific match. I was at an Italian cafe yesterday, and I was surprised by the amount of panettone that was still in there post-Christmas. I wonder if they... overordered. I would say help your local deli out. Go there, get yourself some sunblush tomatoes, some quality cured meat, and for God's sake, just buy a panettone.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.